Welcome to Imagine This Podcast, where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all of the excellence and abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you'll see and experience our city and the incredibly vibrant arts and culture community in a new way. I'm David Lee.
And I'm Mac Antigua.
Well, well, well. So this is the week where MacArthur Antigua goes solo pod with our guests.
I think it's like McCartney's first Wings album. I think it's that good.
There were a couple of bangers on that on that first Wings album.
Except I didn't have Laura, right? Was it, wait, what is his wife? What is his wife? Laura McCartney? Was it Laura McCartney?
Is that right?
Oh my gosh. I'm blanking now. But yeah, his wife, Linda McCartney.
Linda. That, right.
Performed with him.
Isn't Live and Let Die on that first Wings album? Isn't that the only song off that first Wings album?
As we transition into the holiday season, also, I think it's agreed that holiday Christmas time is also one of the worst. McCartney's Christmas song, right? Having a Merry Christmas Time, whatever. That thing is trash. That's awful. Someone asked me today, he's like, do you hate, like, I was working at CrossFit 414, what's up 414, today, and we were playing music, and somebody had said, hey, why don't we play some Christmas music? And I had like a visceral reaction. I'm like, no. And they're like, do you hate? What's wrong with you? Do you hate Christmas? I'm like, pause. I don't hate Christmas. I just don't like the genre of Christmas music. And it was like, explain yourself. And I'm like, I don't have to explain myself. And the reason why I couldn't is like, I couldn't give you any really tangible reasons outside of like most Christmas songs are trash to me. They're novelty trash songs to me.
So, ladies and gentlemen,
it's a steaming hot take.
You've heard it here first. MacArthur Antigua is the progenitor, the original, the OG progenitor of the War on Christmas.
I'm not an OG. I'm just saying I'm one of the sleeper cells that have been activated, is what I'm saying. Do you disagree, David? Be on the record. Do you like Christmas, the genre? Christmas music, the genre?
Yes. And I can also say that, well, I think there's a difference between a Charlie Brown Christmas and
Vince Guaraldi, anything's going to be awesome.
And some other stuff, right? And I'll also note that as the CEO of this organization, I can also see how Christmas music just isn't for some people, right?
I think it's just the battering ram, just battering on us. And it's like, aren't there certain radio stations that actually flip formats?
They flip formats right after
Thanksgiving. That's like those Halloween stores that just pop up. It's just naked capitalism just coming at you. It's just gross. If you're really into the genre, play it all year round. Anyway, here you go.
But that's not the season though, right? I mean, like you want in December time to hear Vince Guaraldi and maybe Mariah Carey once.
Santa Baby, Ariana Grande. That's a good track. They're me. I'm reaching across the aisle. I'm building a bridge.
You're walking back now.
I'm building a bridge. That's a good track. But outside of that, if you were to like, oh, Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. Kill it. Sorry. And I'm not even talking about like sleigh bells, you know, or jingle bells. I get it. Like I'm not going to go after that. That's like going after the founding fathers. That's a no win. I'm just saying new Christmas songs. I'm kind of like, why? Aren't those like blatant cash grabs? Aren't those artists that are like, yeah, we got to kick out a holiday album.
It's only because people will buy them though.
Well, don't get me on a rant about people.
Are you sure you got your workout in this morning? Like you seem a little bit grumpy.
I did. I got it in.
I love that at CrossFit 414, this battle on Christmas music sort of popped off this morning.
Well, it only lasted all of 30 seconds. We got into the workout right after. I'm still living with it. I was just sort of carried with like, gosh, I had a visceral reaction. Like, no, I don't want to hear that. And technically we're past Thanksgiving, so we could hear it. You know,
that's like right. It is the law.
We're in the zone.
It's the 28th Amendment of the Constitution. Right? Yeah. After Christmas. After
somehow that got past three quarters of the state conventional constitutional.
Happened real fast.
It happened super fast. Yeah. I guess it was all by Zoom. It was all Zoom polling. Welcome back, dear listener. Thanks for putting up with that.
Let us know how you like Christmas music in the socials.
We're here with another episode of Imagine This Podcast, and we're going to stay on the holiday theme because it's mainly driven by our new return of the Artist Relief Fund Holiday Edition, Holiday Artist Relief Fund, that is running this month only. And we are aspiring to raise $100,000 to give out $500 relief grants to 200 artists by the end of the month. So that's on our minds. And that also is why we have got our guest, Carl Atiyah Swanson from Springboard for the Arts, after the break, who's a big reason why we were able to do this.
Anyways, MacArthur buried the lead as the solo host on this call with Carl, because I couldn't make it. And you know what? MacArthur was like, nope, not going to reschedule. I'm going solo this time.
As the poet Vanilla Ice once said, I'm on a roll. It's time to go solo. There's a shadow. This is also a backdoor pilot for my own show, by the way. It's a backdoor pilot, a la Happy Days, when they introduced Robin Williams as Mork, who visited the Fonz.
Who visited Milwaukee, right?
Mork visited the Cunninghams. How that's tangentially related to this podcast. Yes, the Happy Days was set in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, suburban Wisconsin. Did you ever know if it was like Tosa or like where it was?
It wasn't Bayview?
What was it? Yeah, we'll have to look that up. That'll probably be in the ephemera if we really understood where it was located.
That's right.
All right. Anyways, long story short, I was the point person on that. I connected with Springboard for the Arts. And as a result, we built a connection around that. I think we showed up really well to them. So when they had this opportunity they got a funder to actually not just provide funds for Springboard in Minnesota, but this funder was saying, hey, I'd like to fund more artists in the Upper Midwest. So they identified us as a partner based on how we showed up in that national cohort, if you will, of how executing funds. And here we are.
I remember in some of those early calls that you had with Springboard that, like, you know, despite the fact that we were the new kids on the block and also had never done anything, the way you showed up on the call, like, people started calling you about, like,
yeah, I looked like I knew a lot more than I was doing. I gave a really good report. You know, it's back to that life is wrestling, David. Like, I knew I had 2 minutes to cut a promo on that call. So, like, I gave them a good 2 minutes. And then people are like, whoa, what are you doing? Can I talk to you afterwards? And so I'm like, yeah.
And meanwhile, on the inside, like, we were holding it all together by string.
Right? Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Bravado and balsa wood. Yeah, pretty much it was all that. But we did it. And we're back again. And we're excited. We hope, listener, you can join in and we'll plug it later, but obviously we're just going to keep battering at home. If you're an artist, you can apply. Particularly we're focusing on artists in priority areas such as artists, BIPOC, Black, Indigenous, people of color artists, artists that are with disabilities or immunocompromised, artists that are age 65 or older, artists that are identified as military veterans, artists that are primary caregivers, artists that are LGBTQIA+. So those are the areas we are, that artists, if you have one of those, at least one of those as part of your identity as an artist, we really encourage you to apply. And even if you got funding the first time around, you're welcome to apply. Just bear in mind, we do want to prioritize first-time grantees this time around. So if you're an artist that goes to you, go to imagine.org. ImagineMKE.org. You'll see we've got it there. You could hit it there at that website, and or share it with those who could really use the $500 in the month of December to support them, as they are artists all over city have had to deal with the ravages of COVID, not only perhaps their practice, but they're also their health. Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
And also emergencies. I think that's the other key, innovation, right, this time around, is that COVID, the COVID response obviously is a big emergency that everybody's had to deal with. But also, if you've had other things that have happened to you that have put you out of work or have made it difficult for you to practice, this emergency fund is you are eligible for.
So that's, we'll mainly talk about Carl a little bit more about Springboard for the Arts, as they've set the pace. They've done an emergency fund actually prior to the pandemic, so they were able to call on that. And so we'll talk about sort of the genesis of what it's like to run a fund, but also just how do they operate. Really fascinating work and just amazing neighbors. And again, excited to be part of this Upper Midwest cohort with them and several other organizations based out of the Dakotas as well as Michigan. So excited to be with that cohort. And what else is going on in the neighborhood, David, in our arts and culture neighborhood?
Yeah, so this week we are announcing our artist partnership to help with Light the Hone. So as you all have seen, Michael Hostad and Ian Abson, our friends at Light the Hone, have succeeded in lighting the Hone. And so now every night the bridge is lit up. And what better time than right now when things seem to be so dark to have a light in Milwaukee over our iconic bridge. And so what is being announced this week, if it hasn't already, is that we're putting out a call to artists to pair an artist with a nonprofit of the month that the folks at the Light the Hone are partnering with for the next 12 months. So I think Mac has the list of the nonprofit partners, and yeah, we're just looking for artists to work with these nonprofit partners to make t-shirts.
That's right. Or other types of goods, right? It could be a t-shirt. Yep. It could be something. And so here are the nonprofits that'll be featured once a month over the course of 2021. You got 88.9 Milwaukee, Radio Milwaukee, Axe Housing, the Black Bucks Fund, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Milwaukee, Wisconsin Humane Society, Icy Stars, Islands of Brilliance, Urban Underground, United Community Center, and We Got This, as well as your host here, Imagine MKE. We're part of that 11 organization cohort. Once a month, one of these organizations will be featured as a partner for the Hone, if you will, right? Featuring their colors occasionally. But then what's really unique is that we're looking for artists to partner with that, to create a piece, could be a shirt, it could be a poster or something that honors and recognizes sort of this non-for-profit. And then what will happen, David, is that Light the Hone will actually sell merchandise that the artist creates, and the artist actually makes a cut, as well as the nonprofit gets a cut. So again, it's another way of, again, building civic pride, and we're excited to partner at Imagine MK to put more artists, get more money in artists' pockets and future.
Yeah, so really exciting. So if you're an artist, be sure you you catch that RFP to, or that request for proposals, which is out, I believe, this week, and be on the lookout for the different featured nonprofit partners launching in January.
Right. So again, it sounds like if you listen to us every week, we got something new happening. and just because we're heading into December, A lot of folks, you know, it's sometimes in my nonprofit career that tends to be when we wind things down in the nonprofit sector, right? You're wrapping up a calendar year and you're trying to use up all your off days before things roll over. Not here, not in this enterprise. We actually are turning up the dial. So definitely stay tuned, as we'll probably announce something new next week that's going on. Because as we were running through this today, right, we're running like, can we talk about this yet? Has it come to fruition? Oh no, that's not ready yet. So stay tuned for that.
Okay, MacArthur, now that we've gotten all of our announcements out of the way, why did you take the lead and read us Carl's bio so we can get into your solo interview with Carl Atiyah Swanson?
Yes, Carl Atiyah Swanson is associate director over at Springboard for the Arts, which, talking about Springboard for the Arts, it's an economic and community development organization for artists and by artists. They have offices in Fergus Falls and St. Paul, Minnesota, and they provide programs that help artists make a living and a life, as well as programs that help communities connect to the creative power of artists. Carl himself is a creative with an MBA, a strategic facilitator, an omnivorous arts maker, and a practical optimist. He's a third culture kid with a love of adventure, maps, good food, family, and exciting ideas that center people and culture. And he is a joy to talk to, which you will get to see and hear with your earballs after the break.
Myself to a beach on the countryside, walk down the street, whiskey neat, feeling just right, no one's problems in my ears.
Carl, welcome to the virtual Milwaukee.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for having me.
So great to have you. It's been fun being in conversations with you that you've held, so it's great that you get to go to a Zoom call that you don't have to.
I don't have to host this.
You don't have to host it.
That makes me happy.
Thanks for being on the pod, and we're excited to be in conversation again. But before we sort of get to the scope of work, we always like to understand our guests of sort of their own origin stories on some level. So
for you, Carl, would love to learn, what's a formative arts and cultural experience for you? Was it a book or a play or something you created and delivered? Would love to sort of hear about the story then, but then what's the resonance with you today in 2020?
Yeah, absolutely. I think about this a lot because I grew up living in Cairo, Egypt, and in Rome, Italy. My parents are Lutheran pastors, and my dad's a theologian of the early church in the Middle East. And so grew up really in cultures that were immersed in the arts and in historic arts and in that. So I have just very formative memories of being around architecture and paintings and sculptures and just having that be like an everyday part of life, and music just being a part of that too. Such that that has always been a part of my life. I've been a theater kid and went to an art school because I got a scholarship to go there, but then came back to the Twin Cities and fell in with a bunch of theater makers and musicians and became a PR person for a while and just like really all over the place. Like, what can I do to make the art scene better, to make things beautiful, to make things connected, has really been like the frame and focus of my life.
Yeah.
But about a specific thing, I was thinking about this question, and one of the first big shows that I was a part of when I came back to the Twin Cities in 2006-2007 was this indie rock opera by this band Fort Wilson Riot that my friends were in. They wrote this thing called Itigaragua, which is a concept album about, you know, a mysterious stranded voyager and all his misadventures, and put on this show as an actor and dancer with this company that created this devised show to tell the story with a live rock and roll band. You know, putting together sets made out of burlap sacks and like dollar store pirate costumes and stuff. But what it was really instructional about how much we can make out of little things using our imagination and grit, and how you can pull together different art forms and different disciplines in really wonderful ways. And then fundamentally, how you need really great stage managers and like admin and like people keeping track of things. And so that like through line is, you know, when it comes to resonance now and leadership now, what I think of is like, what are all the roles that we need? What are the things that need doing? How can we make things, how can we like add something else to this? How can we make it more interesting? And it's an aspirational thing because it's also, it's hard and it takes a lot of energy. It takes a lot of sustained effort. But like, I think about, you know, the old Bedlam Theater and putting together shows, that extended our imagination and made new things possible. Like, and that's what I think of as formative experience.
Now, Carl, I'm just sort of sitting with it because you dropped on me, which, you know, I went to your website, tried to do a little background in it. I didn't get that, but like for you, you said come back home, but you said you spent time abroad.
Yeah.
A formative time abroad. Mm-hmm. So, but there is home, like the Twin Cities for you is home, right? Is that fair to say? Or
become home.
Oh, it's become home.
I used to joke that like I was from wherever I happened to sleep the night before.
Yeah.
My mom's family's from Minnesota. My dad's family's from Chicago, Illinois. Yeah. They're also a Lutheran missionary family. So from all over the place too.
Right.
But I've now lived in the Twin Cities for just about 15 years. So, by virtue of sticking around, this is home. By virtue of having a wife and kids here, this is home.
Right. Well, I'm because it just sort of, just even in that brief thing, have you ever, this is where I brought pop culture references, which probably alienate most of our audience, but I was just sort of the image of the game Katamari Darcy, which was on like Nintendo. I don't know if that strikes a chord. It's like video game where the premise of the game is you start at the top of this hill and you just roll, your character rolls and just picks up things and it becomes this big whimsical ball of items. And it just, the ball gets bigger and bigger. And I'm not sure if it's a capitalism commentary or just the whimsicalness of like, what else, it sounds like you're very much a product of all these fascinating, you know, experiences.
It's a very apt metaphor. Like,
yeah, whether your consciousness or not,
it makes a lot of sense to me.
Whether you're cognizant or not, right? There's probably stuff with you that you didn't know that stuck with you. But then I imagine in your current role or the roles you've had to call upon them. And sort of because of just the perhaps the inventiveness of, well, you're here right now. So what do we do with that?
Yeah.
And to pivot off that, you know, as I did such extensive research, went to your awesome website, which is really well put together. I love the phrase, you described yourself as a creative with an MBA, a strategic facilitator, an omnivorous arts maker and a practical optimist, right? It goes back to this thing. It's like,
you're accumulation of problems.
But it also speaks to this notion of, and again, it resonates with me a lot in the sense that like when I was younger, like I didn't know what I was going to be when I grew up, right? Mm-hmm. Or I didn't know what I was going to be. And I think there's something about what you describe is it's like, you don't necessarily have a label for what you're going to do, but there's the way that you approach what you're going to do. And I'm really curious about, and you just mentioned that one project that was just, you know, burlap sacks and rock operas. You know, as you're now currently enrolled at Springboard, maybe not at Springboard, can you tell us about another project or just another way that you've been able to marshal and leverage all these ways of being into manifesting?
Yeah, I mean, it's this, that having like to pull from a lot of different things is super accurate. And to you sort of not knowing what you were going to be, but like making stuff happen is really resonant, I think, in the rest of my life. There's a metaphor that I often use when I try to make sense of things, which is that some people are marathon runners. Like they have a vision for a thing and their job is to put one foot in front of the other and to make that thing happen. Yeah. And that's a really valid way of thinking about dreams and thinking about goals. But it's not the only way to be. And I often think of myself as a soccer midfielder. I have to run around to a lot of different places. I have teammates. We can be moving in a lot of different directions that change through time. Things change based on circumstances. Yeah. But we're still playing a game and we're still playing a game together. We're still figuring out like what we want to do together. So I think about that just as a framing metaphor for things that I like to do and stuff that I like to make happen. And here's a project that I just got a chance to work on recently is that last year I was lucky enough to be a part of the Salzburg Global Seminar. It's based in Salzburg, Austria. It's a sort of think tank around around culture and democracy fundamentally, and then has a young cultural innovator program in it. And I got to be a part of the young cultural innovator program. Wow. Last year, got a chance to be in Salzburg with these amazing group of people from around the US, from around Europe, from Africa and Asia. And, you know, in that same way, like, you know, this rolling down the hill and gathering lots of things is a lot of gathering of new experiences and meeting new people and doing new things. And I got a chance in this 2020 cohort, which had to meet digitally, to work with them to create like a mini welcome reflection zine. So if you're not actually traveling to a place, what are some experiences? What are some meditations to think about, you know, your body in motion, what it's like to be in a place, what it's like to think about relationships and connections, and produce that for this 2020 cohort. And then I put together a workshop for them. Doing it digitally, you know, 7 a.m. across 5 different time zones. but around, you know, sharing your work and knowing your values. And from that, I got to pull from a lot of the work that we do at Springboard around specifically myself, around like toolkits and sharing. And then also my own personal creative practice around writing and zine making and doing stuff, little tactile things. So yeah, really that pulled in a lot of, you know, personal things, personal reflections, personal creative practices, strategic practice, you know, framing strategy, next steps. What do you talk about when you talk about your next projects that are in play at Springboard, and then sort of in the larger MBA, thinking about, you know, how are we navigating late stage capitalism together? What does this look like as we're trying to make new things and make new worlds happen?
Oh man, you know, at the risk of being oversimplistic, right? That we're pretty glib here, so apologies on the podcast.
Please, let's launch it.
Yeah, but I think what's really coming up for me is this notion of, when I think of institutional life or capitalism, right, at the fear of like big ideas, there's this notion of efficiency, right? Best practices. How do we do the thing?
Yeah.
Right. And again, an edge towards a greater efficiency means more people value because it costs less to produce a thing, ..
Yeah.
And I would offer, right, that what arts and culture provide a pathway is like, well, no two people are alike. And and humanity actually suggests that we're an amalgamation of so many unique pieces that you can try to be as efficient as you can. This thing's gonna land on us differently. Yeah. And it even speaks to what you're even offering is what would it mean from the beginning process to understand and implement. You begin with the humanity that's already present in the quote unquote end user or whoever we're building for and how to build for that. I guess that's an interesting tension that comes up, you know, for me. I don't know where the question's leading. I just wanted to name though, like, I think what you're offering a path for and the way you work is what would it mean to hold that? You know, what does it mean to hold that? And I guess for where I come from in Milwaukee or what we're talking about is what would it mean for artists to actually be in decision-making rooms as opposed to after the fact going, hey, can you make the poster that makes this decision easy to comment, right? You know, like, and so that's, and I know that's for us in Imagine, like we're very eager to wanting to have artists involved because our hypothesis is that just by the way they look and are surfacing or even in the languages and modalities they view in, they're seeing something strange that could be familiar. They're seeing something familiar that could be strange and there's something there needs to happen. And I guess it's really exciting to talk to you to hear your evidence of like, this is what it's like in practice.
Yeah.
Even though you're an arts administrator in quotes, right? This is anybody, right? Like, again, anyway, I don't know if that resonates with you or like, no, we can move on, dude.
No, it totally hits. It totally hits. And a couple things as you're laying it down. It's like, one, I really fundamentally believe in getting a little lost and in taking time to get a little lost and explore. Because efficiency says you can't do that. Efficiency says you have to keep on moving. Mm-hmm. But if you stop and if you look, you can discover new things. And that's fundamentally what artists are brilliant at. Mm-hmm. And creative people are brilliant at is stopping and looking. And in that, seeing what else is possible. There was a report from the Knight Foundation a couple mm-hmm. years ago. Funnily enough, it was a report on competitions in philanthropy. And so,
philanthropy doing a thing about philanthropy.
There. There's a line that has always stuck with me from that, which is there are no side effects. You simply haven't drawn your parameters wide enough. And like that, that stays with me because I think one of the things that we talk about when we talk about having artists at the table in decision-making processes or in community engaged processes is how do we reimagine where those parameters are so that it is more inclusive and so that it is more more fully encompassing of human experience.
You know, Carl, you're also bringing up from stuff I've made that's working in the nonprofits, right, for the last 24 or 25 years, right? Is there some logic models and there needs to be this result and we need to prove to the people that this is, and what you're describing is like, that's fine.
Yeah.
And we don't know until we put this in play, right? Yeah. You know, and there's some conceit to say, let me convince you to donate a fund this when we know, because we know how it's going to play out. But what you're offering is like, we don't know until we actually experience it. And are we open to it as opposed to filtering for the results we want to see or dare I say, trying to defend what we said we were going to do. And I think it goes against at least a lot of the nonprofit, like the things in the industry, that nonprofit field.
Right. And there is a very serious conversation in philanthropy right now about what it means to actually fund change. And it is not in logic models and it is not in, you know, here's a $10,000 grant for 2 years that you need to report on in micro scale. Like we are seeing so much in our culture right now that is a result of, you know, large scale cultural efforts that have been funded without that logic model in mind, but with from a very, you know, bluntly, like, you know, people who have funded conservative think tanks, people have funded efforts that, you know, don't really serve humanity, but put a lot of money into that effort without like the foundation expectation of getting a report back in 2 years that you solved institutional poverty. Like, we're having this very serious conversation of philanthropy and it is a conversation that, and you know, working in a nonprofit, we're in a place where we both have to advocate for it and are in the sort of weird position of like, please make this change happen. Like we need longer term funding. Like we need to be able to do this work relationally and on the ground. We need to reimagine how we think about our relationship to communities at all levels.
And I think part of the challenge and nuances is that for institutions not to get so good at being an institution, right? It has to be accountable, right? To the folks that are closest to the problem that you're trying to solve or the oppressions that are causing these things to be built in the first place. And that's a nuance, right? Because on some level, your institution's really good at managing resources effectively, but it's gotta be slop. It's gotta be able to get lost.
Yep.
To your point, like how does it get lost in a way? So, We're not going to solve it on this call, but I just realized that that's what happened. You're right. And let's pivot to that, because I think Springboard for the Arts, which is the organization that, you know, we met through, and it's an organization that's based, serves all of Minnesota.
Yeah.
Right. But it has Fergus Falls, Minnesota,
Fergus
right?
Falls and St. Paul are offices.
So there's some touch points there.
Yep.
Throughout the whole state. And it describes itself as an economic and community development organization for artists and by artists. So in some ways, you're almost like living the you're walking the path while making it, yeah, right? Or, you absolutely know, in the sense of like, what would it mean for artists to drive this? And I guess I'm wondering, you know, that's really good copy on a website. But what's the story? What's the story that helps me understand it better beyond the About Us page on the tab?
I mean, I think part of the story is understanding some longevity, because Springboard in its sort of current iteration was founded in 1991. And so we have a long history of doing work with artists, as artists, and for artists in community. When I sometimes talk to people who say like, oh, I really want these Springboard programs, I want a Springboard in my city, or I want a Springboard in my state, one of the first things I have to tell them is like, you have to realize that this has been built up over a lot of years. Like it doesn't happen really quickly or overnight. But what it has at its core is this notion that artists are creative, artists are valuable, artists see things differently, and we need to find ways to support and incubate and cultivate that kind of creative people power. And that starts fundamentally with individual artists and with small arts organizations, like, you know, really grassroots people who are doing things in your neighborhood. And how can we support artists who are doing work on the ground level? Before Springboard was called Springboard for the Arts, it was called Resources and Counseling for the Arts. And there is like a certain element of that that just is a through line in our work.
Yeah.
How do we find resources? If we don't have them, how do we build resources? So that's professional development, that's skills, that's, you know, access to legal resources and access to health resources and our longstanding emergency relief fund programming. Mm-hmm. Like that's all like focused on individual artists. How do you do your work? How do you build a career? And then over time, especially for the last 10 years or so, that's really grown into, if we can support artists, one of the things that we also need to support is communities seeing the value of artists, is having structures with which to engage the artists in their neighborhood, in the artists in their communities. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, with the sort of first wave of creative placemaking work, working in sort of in that format of artists who are in and of neighborhoods, finding ways for people to engage, be engaged in problem solving, be engaged in community programs, and has grown sort of over the last decades, expanded, you know, what does this work look like in a rural context versus an urban context? What does it look like if we're taking leadership cohorts and we're working with artists to build networks and relationships? What does it look like fundamentally if we're sharing our work? So that's a big part of the other part of the work that we do, building toolkits for the things that we've done so that we can get them back out into the world. Because we do get a lot of questions like, how do I start this? How do I do this thing? And it is easier for us to like have it written down and write a recipe that you can then take and riff on and adapt to what it means in your community with your resources and your assets to move that forward. And you asked for a specific example. So I think that just what we've done in the course of the pandemic is a really good example of that, right?
Yeah.
So we've had a long time emergency relief fund for artists. It started about a decade ago with a $10,000 gift from a theater artist named Bob Malos. And it was essentially a small concern. Like it's $500 for like people, if you had a fire or your studio flooded or you like broke your leg and you couldn't perform, like how do we help make life easier, defray some costs, get people back to their working life? When the pandemic hit, we realized that we had both the infrastructure in terms of, we were an organization that had fundraisers in staff capacity, and we had the experience with running an emergency relief fund that we could scale up. And in the first week of the pandemic, we were like, we're going to put $10,000 of money into this emergency relief fund. And, you know, that was March 13th, and you know, applications were full up for that 10K by March 14th. But then being able to pivot and to do fundraising and to build out, you know, our staff capacity to make sure that we were getting funds in and then getting it back out to individuals. That's the taking care of the individual artists in this moment, being responsive, and then pivoting all of our online, all of our professional development, professional, you know, artist career consultant workshops or consultations and workshops to online. So people could then, you know, what does it mean to be working in this new context? How do I reimagine my creative career right now?
Yeah.
And then as we had compounding crises with the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis, thinking like, what is it that our community needs now? And so being able to move funds and organize artists to create messages, to create artwork on some of the plywoods along University Avenue in St. Paul. And then as that's developed, creating this Artist Respond programming, which we just closed an open call for at the beginning of the month, but it is around combating social isolation. So again, paying artists small amounts of money. So it helps them financially, it helps build their creative practice, but it is around what are you doing in your community to connect people, so to mitigate social isolation in these times, right. So keep people safe. Right. And so that's the community development part of it too. Yeah. It's not just community development as, hey, we're building buildings, but community development, like how we're building relationships, creative relationships, and how are we getting artists in on some of those decision-making and reciprocal relationships there?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That last part really resonates with us here at Imagine, because the county chair, our county executive, David Crowley, has asserted that public health will be the health equity is going to be the focus. And so his charge is, how can Milwaukee County be the healthiest county in the state? And he's looking at inclusive decision-making, right? Making sure there are people that haven't been included, making sure there's investment in communities that might have been disinvested. And then finally, how can the county actually deliver better on the services that it already tries to deliver, particularly for those audiences who might not have experienced them better, right?
Yeah.
And so for us, you know, that last part resonates, that social isolation, because again, we think that arts and culture already built into public health in a way, right? And again, we're looking at the University of Florida and Art Place model about evidence practices on that. So in a lot of ways, it's like this thing that I think arts orgs kind of knew, but just trying to put a frame on it, right? So therefore it can translate it to our electeds and to those externally, go like, yeah, this is what it means to be less lonely, or to actually look at a building and go, I see myself here, or even to even go by. So that part really resonates, and we're excited about that. And again, you all have been doing that work and continue that work. I guess I want to sort of pivot to that and going like, what was it like doing that nationally? Because you were just kind of focused. And like, when you talk about the emergency funds, because like, because by virtue of being able to do toolkits and you kind of had that muscle.
Yep.
What was that like to see, you know, folks like me email you from across the way, and then me times 50, like everybody going to you all to go, how do you do this? So, I mean, how do you make sense of all that? Or how do you not go crazy?
Totally. I mean, and that was part of the, like, you know, we take time, we get lost, we try a lot of iterations of things. And like you said, it's a muscle that when it kicked in, it was like, oh yeah, this is the thing that we have to do. Like, and we know how to make something like this happen. And so for us, it was based off of the, you know, we already had that frame of approaching it in place. And so, you know, we didn't set out to be national leaders in emergency relief funds for individual artists, but hey, this is what we're doing right now. So let's do this thing. And again, like we want to see a country where artists are valued and where every community has the resources to connect with their artists. Yeah. And we know that we as Springboard for the Arts aren't going to be able to do that in every single community. So if we want to see that happen nationally, if we want to see that real big culture shift, we have to be sharing tools. We can't be closed fist about things. We have to be, you know, letting people know what it is that we're doing and encouraging people to adapt and try new things. Mm-hmm. And that I think goes back to, you know, so many of the conversations we're having right now is like, how do we not go back to a normal that wasn't necessarily working out for a lot of people, both in the creative industry, but then fundamentally for people of color, fundamentally for Native and Indigenous people, fundamentally for people with disabilities, and fundamentally for people who have been left out of so many avenues of prosperity and so many avenues of progress in this country. Mm. Like, normal wasn't working in America. And so this is an opportunity to, you know, to share and to connect and to really push for some policy shifts and some bigger thinking.
So as you were, you know, during that March and April, and you invited folks to come together on calls, do you know how many folks joined those calls, or how, you know, have a sense of how many?
Yeah, I mean, it was about like 150 individual people
from
the country over the course of all the calls. I mean, the biggest one was, I think, like the first one and the fundraising ones, and like, you know, 80 people from around the country on those calls.
Right.
And that toolkit that we shared out, I mean, it's been shared out hundreds of times. And, you know, one of our storytelling challenges at Springboard is that we value ease of access and sort of free-flowing information. So we tell you like how many times something's been downloaded, but we don't want to be like proprietary, like you have to tell us if you're using the tool. Like that's not our MO in the world. Right. Our MO is like,
let's open source. It's open source.
Let's get seeds out. Let's let people plant things and grow them themselves.
I mean, I think I was on calls with folks from funds that were giving out millions of dollars. You know, like I believe there's one fund from LA that was like an entertainment oriented one, right? And so again, like some funds are influencing, and like we've never done this before, and some funds are just really well established ones that they got a fund. I mean, again, that's to your point. This stuff gets a little bit lost in some ways, but I think it bears important that these folks aren't talking to each other and figuring out a way to do better. Mm-hmm. In this time, if it wasn't for Springboard stepping up to go, hey, let's have this conversation, or let's set up this Facebook group where you should at least tab each other and do that. And I think that's, you know, it doesn't seem like a lot, but I think in the aggregate, it is huge. And I'll say the last piece about that really resonated with me was just how lonely people felt.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because it's
so hard.
So hard. Right. And that was something you were very good at. I would say you acknowledged, we can technically talk about this, but let's take 5 minutes just to like hold each other a little bit virtually, because this is heavy. You know, so I think that's the other part of the work that y'all are very keen to, you know.
Yeah. This notion that you are not alone is one of the things that like keeps me going. Like it's just like a personal mantra. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I've infused that, especially into like the creative exchange platform, sharing toolkits and stories. And it's, you know, comes back to Springboard coming back as like, you're not alone in this work. We got to find ways to connect. Otherwise we won't make the change. Otherwise we won't be the people we want to be.
Yeah. And again, this was not on your strategic planning meeting in December, you know, right? Like this, you know, December this time last year, there was no forecasting of we're going to influence millions of dollars, like millions of flow. Right. Yeah. It's an amazing, you know, thing I want to celebrate and appreciate. And we're going to celebrate again because you're running it back. Right. We're running it back.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. And I'll hype it up. But this is because we got you on the call. Tell us about what's invited y'all or inspired y'all to contact us about this project.
Totally. I mean, this is, I think, in a pandemic, everyone's sort of ideas of what sort of the established order of giving have all gone out the window. Like there's new things popping up all over the place. I mean, one of the things, again, that we're seeing is that there are, you know, there's, this is actually not just pandemic really, but this is like fundamentally, we have all the resources in this country that we need to take care of people. And we have those resources that they exist out there. And being in the pandemic and being in the crisis of racial justice and responding to police violence, we're seeing new ways of giving and new opportunities that previously just hadn't like existed and definitely hadn't been on like Springboard's radar. So we had this opportunity where, you know, because we had been really actively fundraising and visible with the Emergency Relief Fund to receive some more funding for a second round of the Emergency Relief Fund. In the first round of the fund that we ran in 2020, sort of from March, and then we closed applications in June and then worked through the waiting list through the summer and into the early fall, we were able to get just over $1 million to 2,222 artists across Minnesota.
Wow.
Which blows my mind. Like
it's amazing.
Like so many times over the course of this year, it's like, none of this was fathomable at any point for us. I would say one of our strong suits, which is maybe just because everyone who works at Springboard is an artist, like we can take weird situations that are unexpected and be like, well, that's happening. What do we do with this now?
Yeah. Yes to this. Yeah. Okay. Now what?
Yeah. Okay. Now what? Like, oh, okay. Yeah. All right, let's move on. Let's figure out what else to do. And sort of in conversations, had this opportunity to receive some more funding for a second round of the Emergency Relief Fund for ourselves, which is we always wanted to do that. We know that the fund will never go back to this old model that we had. It's like, you know, two or three applicants a month for $500 a pop. Like, it's just never going to be that again.
Yeah.
But we had this opportunity for some more funding, and then that opportunity grew into, do you know people across the upper Midwest who can get funds to artists? And, you know, because we had hosted those calls, because, you know, and, you know, Imagine was you brand new to me. Like, I had never met you until, like, you emailed me out of the blue, you know, Laura Zabel, our executive director, out of the blue, I think, like, at the end of March.
And yeah.
Like, oh, here we're doing this thing. But the other folks who we've been in, you know, longer relationship with, but people who we could see were doing the work and who had the relationships on the ground and who had figured out ways to, you know, to support artists that were meaningful in their own communities. And so we had this opportunity to get some funds to other folks. And so if we can find ways to get money to artists, we're going to say, yes, let's do that. So we have this Upper Midwest Emergency Relief Fund cohort. So covering arts organizations through the Dakotas. So the Arts Partnership in Fargo, Arts South Dakota, and Racing Magpie, which is based in Rapid City, South Dakota. Ourselves, Springboard in Minnesota, Imagine Milwaukee, and then the Crosshatch Center for Arts and Ecology and Culture Source, both in Michigan. And, you know, these are folks who we see in the work and, like, we know are doing the work. And so it's an opportunity for us to, A, get money to artists, and then B, and really fundamentally, like, how do we learn from each other? You know, we had this big opportunity sort of in this crisis to make some big new networks and big new connections. How do we take this time to deepen some of those connections and think about what we need across the region, think about what else we can do together. So that's what we're doing now.
We're, you know, Carl, want you to know that we are leveraging that gift and we're raising more money off of that. So, and that's the thing about it. Right. And so your money, we're hoping to at least double it. If not 2.5 times it.
Awesome.
So we're in process, and our hope is to get out 200 awards, 200 grants.
That's brilliant.
To folks within by 12/31, right? By the end of the month, because of the holiday, right?
Yeah.
Getting out there. That's our aspiration. Yep. We've got some traction, and as we're speaking right now, folks are submitting, and we're so totally appreciative of learning, because we're going to do stuff differently this time because of everyone else is like, hey, we were doing it this way, we were doing a lottery, and even nuances doing a lottery and just getting like, use this random Excel tool, you know, and I'm like, I wouldn't know that unless I asked folks, like, I did it and I was able to test it. And I'm like, I think we're ready. So it's immediately we're pretty confident we'll be able to execute the nuts and bolts of it. And we're really excited about it. And I think to your point, I'm excited about the possibility of, again, continuing how to have an upper Midwest conversation, if you will, or again, a larger than us in Milwaukee conversation about, because I think for us, the place we sit, you know, as David likes to say, we're an arts and culture org that doesn't perform arts and culture, but the way we convene, I think, is an art in itself, right? Yep. We kind of have to think of, to your point, think of things differently. And a lot of times there's a lot of audiences are like, what do you do?
Absolutely.
And we almost have to go sit with it for a second, get lost for a second, just get lost. You know, I know you want the sweet logic models, and I agree with you. I don't doubt that, but I almost go, logic models have only gotten us this far.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, so again, I'm not trying to be precious. Sometimes I go, David, am I being super precious about, like, almost like the stereotypical artist, and don't question what, you know, like, I think that we interrogate ourselves, but a lot of times I know I feel sometimes hindered by the frameworks folks have on what this is. And again, it's with great responsibility, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. But I don't know how that resonates with y'all. Like, it not to say you're interrogated, but, like, there's a level you want to have agility and flexibility to create, even though, like.
And I mean, and one of our core principles is that, like, we have a really broad definition of who is an artist. Like, we're not discipline specific, and we're not necessarily a producing arts organization in like the traditional sense, but it is around, how do people self-define in their arts? How do they use their arts in their own lives to make meaning? How do they use their arts in their community to make meaning? And how can we support those efforts? So, like, it is about convening and being broad-based and, like, being really open to people. And that's, I think, one of the things that's exciting about working with you all in the work that you do, is that you figured out some, like, really great activation tools for getting artists to talk to their electeds and to, like, be really pointed and specific in ways. And I think that that's an exciting thing to share that Imagine brings to the group as a whole, like, and we can learn from that too. So yeah, as I'm excited to be an ongoing conversation.
Awesome. Speaking of conversation, I guess one of the pieces that I'm wondering about, and I didn't prep you on this, so apologies if I didn't hit you with this. We often invite people to our guests to be the, we have a special power here, is that our guests can be the czar of arts and culture in Milwaukee, but it only lasts as long as the call lasts. Now, granted, I know you're not in our jurisdiction. So my question is altered this way. What has been one of the public policies that you've witnessed in where you all are at in Minnesota that you think has gone a long way towards fostering a vibrant, arts-driven, arts-centered, arts and culture-centered place? What might be a specific piece of policy? Not that you have to copy it, but just you could go like, man, you know, that's in place, and that has really helped because blank.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, Minnesota has, you know, we have a really rich ecosystem of arts organizations and of, you know, arts and culture minded foundations. And in 2008, we passed this legacy amendment, which is a partnership with conservation elements for supporting arts conservation and wildlife across the state as part of sort of Minnesota's whole culture.
Arts, conservation, and wildlife. That's a fun partnership. You don't expect to be in the same conversation.
Huge credit to you know, all the organizers who put that coalition together and put together this notion that, like, what does it mean to have Minnesotan culture? It is, you know, arts in a traditional sense, and it is hunting and fishing, and it is our outdoors. So, like, how do we build a grand coalition around that? You know, and that's, like, that's really exciting. The thing that I'm also really excited about right now is that in St. Paul, which is where one of our offices is based, Mayor Carter is part of the Mayors for Guaranteed Income pilot program across the U.S. And so the city of St. Paul is piloting some guaranteed income in some targeted neighborhoods and potentially working on getting some artists in there as well, figuring that out. And I mean, this is the thing. More and more, I think that we don't need as many, like, arts specific policies in our cities and our countries. What we need are human supporting policies.
Yes.
I have two little kids. I have a 4 and a 6-year-old. And if we had free or better resource daycares, then the amount of money that we're spending on daycare could go to other projects and go to other things.
Yeah.
That is a thing that I would love to see. And, you know, one of Springboard's longstanding programs has been around artists' access to healthcare. Mm. Before the ACA, that was like vouchers into community clinics to get people into some level of care when insurance wasn't available to them. Post ACA, it's been, you know, building relationships with navigators and with brokers to get people into reasonably priced insurance to get them covered. Mm. So, like, what can we, like, and I feel like that is a fundamental thing that if artists and entrepreneurs would have their health insurance taken care of, with not being tied to a 9-to-5, then imagine all the other things that people could experiment with or could try to do.
Right.
That's for me. I think that one of the ways that we can care for ourselves as artists is to care for ourselves as a whole community. And what can we build together to do that?
I don't know if you probably are hip to this cat. There's this person out of Drexel University who's an art researcher around arts economy. And I forgot his name, so it crushes me, but he shared with me the white paper, and his whole point of this white paper was like, hey, let's not think of artists as this, like, unicorn class, but actually artists should have access to affordable housing. Artists should have access, right? It's like, artists are workers, you know, like, let's not separate them as this really, like, of almost these muses for the wealthy, rather, to your point, and again, everything you talked about really resonates with one of the rhetorical pieces we constantly talk about is art. Again, this is, again, a false dichotomy, but for the case of being a polemic, let's put it, like, is art on this, like, really nice Corinthian pillar that it has a light shining on it and has velvet ropes, and you buy a ticket to see art and there's a placard that tells you why it's art? Or is art like the sun and the water and the air, and it's to all of us, and it makes me human? And when I hear about that part, that coalition you built, they got it in that end. They're like, this is our water. Yeah. This is our legacy, totally. Physical legacy. And I think because of your state and your ability to do that rhetorically, it's gone a long way towards positioning in people's minds that it isn't, oh, that belongs to downtown or that belongs to that group of people. But yeah. It belongs to all.
So. I mean, this is rhetorical, but like, think of art as valuable. Don't think of art as precious. Mm. It's like, how can we value it, but not pedestal it? Yeah, that's really important. And, you know, yeah. And housing, food, healthcare, like these are things that would make everybody better.
Right.
Makes our art seem better.
Yes. Or perhaps it inspire more artists to come out of folks who probably didn't see themselves as artists, totally. Have more time to be artists.
Yeah.
Carl, how can they find you and how can they find the work of Springboard?
Totally. Yeah. Springboardforthearts.org is our main website. We're also sharing stories and toolkits from our work at Springboard Exchange, which is our creative exchange platform. And then at Springboard Arts on all of your social media feeds is where you can find Springboard there. And then me personally, carlatiaswanson.com or castconsulting.xyz. I'm at Katias, C-A-T-I-Y-A-S on your social medias. So come and connect. It's one of the things that I love about the 21st century is that I get to have friends all over the world. Many of them I've never met in person just because they said hi or I said hi on some weird, awkward social media post.
Well, Carl, I appreciate, again, not only you joining us on the pod, but I'm looking forward to the further co-conspiracy and trouble we'll get into from here on out. Carl, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Max.
I felt a kindred spirit with him.
Yeah.
And he's also, when he said, I believe in getting a little lost, he obviously knows our podcast. He's like, he's on the right one. This is it. This is the podcast to get a little bit lost.
The thing that I really loved about getting to know him a little bit more through the interview was, I mean, to your point about sort of finding a kindred spirit, I was surprised at how many times hearing him talk reminded me of some of the conversations we've had between you and me and between us as a staff about how we want Imagine MKE to look, feel, and operate like.
Yeah.
And that like really felt like dispositionally and organizationally very similar. He was dispositionally and organizationally very similar to us, right? And I think that, I don't know if there's some sort of like law of attraction stuff happening, but like there's definitely a sense of like, we're doing the same things. We have the same kind of view on the work and they're just, you know, what, 20, 30 years ahead of us.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I would love to have a enchantment off with him versus Anne Basting. I think that would be a fun contest to be like, just to have a conversation with them too, and just see who can make the other person wonder more. Cause there's definitely moments where I would sort of be listening to what Carl had talked about and chewing on it deeply and going, wow. And like I said, we're so excited to connect with him in this Upper Midwest Emergency Fund cohort. That's a good excuse just to be in larger conversation with our neighbors around this and what might a regional approach towards championing the arts in our civic engagement, in our economic development, et cetera. So he's an incredible thought partner to have. I felt a lot of kindred spirits that like, we want to get lost a little bit. Like it's okay to get a little bit lost. And I think what he talked about, how artists are actually really great at getting lost, but then finding the meaning in it and, you know, surfacing the new insight and aha because of that, that's what we need a lot now. We need a lot more of that now. So great to have him in that work.
It also heartened me to sort of hear him also say, you know, the idea that they sort of just fall into things, not sort of just fall into things, but they just end up doing things because that's what they're doing now. And like for us to sort of this last year, right? Like while we had a plan, obviously 2020 sort of threw that out the window, but like we ended up sort of doing the thing that was presented to us. And it really, I think really affirmational of sort of the posture we as an organization have taken to the challenges that we're faced.
I think the larger question I'm continuing to hold, and again, this might be a little bit inside baseball, so maybe our listeners aren't that interested in it, but I tend to wonder, the efficiency conversation really lit me up, right? Yeah. And I get right, you want to be accountable to folks that invest in you, and you want to be accountable so that they know where the plan is. But I also recognize, much like we lived through this year, there's some things, and this is not to say you don't plan, right, David? Yeah. But it is this notion of you might have to be willing to be able to be agile and, you know, not necessarily articulate specifically what it's going to be, but rather be really clear about the direction you hand, so you can, quote unquote, fall into those things.
Yep.
I don't think you fall into things that you're not, that's not in your DNA, right? Because, and so again, I don't know if I'm just trying to be a whiner about folks who tell me, I don't get what you do. You know,
I think you have to do both, right? I think you have to be able, if art, as we've often liked to say, is the ultimate code switcher, right? You got to be able to do both. You got to be able to do the logic models and also recognize that, like, these logic models or whatever your plan is has to have the flexibility to accommodate for whimsy, for chance, for all the other things that sort of happen, right? And I think the when you guys were talking about sort of the time scale for change and the time scale for funding change or the resources needed to fund change over the time scale of change, right? I think is something that we're beginning to have the conversation of here in Milwaukee and in Wisconsin. And at the same time, you know, I think in order for us to be able to have that conversation or to be able to meet that time scale, we have to have a little bit more efficiency to be able to prove out that, you know, we ought to be, that organizations like ours ought to be able to do the work that we're doing, right? So I think it is a little bit of both. And it's, I think it's a fascinating conversation. And I think this connection, this growing connection with him and all the other folks at Springboard and some of the other partners, hopefully will move us further in that direction.
So you know who also have a deep connection with?
Our listeners, 100%.
Our deep, deep, lovely, lovely listeners. Thanks again for listening to another episode of Imagine This Podcast, y'all. Rate it 5 stars, share it a positive review. If it's your first time here, smash that subscribe button. Tell other people about us. Write a note on a rock and throw it through other people's windows. Metaphorically, obviously. And let us know how it goes at pod@imaginemke.org with either the story of you throwing that metaphorical rock against somebody's window or just, again, the insights or things that you want to hear on this podcast relative to the vibrancy of arts and culture making a more inclusive and better Milwaukee.
Tell us whether or not you love or hate Christmas music on Twitter and Instagram @imagine_MKE or at Facebook @imaginemke. As normal, if you mention the pod on social media, we will make you a #imaginaryfriendMKE in the Imagine capital N Nation MKE. Listen to our co-friend podcasts, Arts Forward MKE, hosted by Lindsay Sheridan, and also Black Imagination, hosted by Kenita Hickman and Antoine Carter. You don't want to miss them.
I think we covered it all. But in the meantime, y'all stay warm, stay healthy, and get your holiday playlist ready. Until next week. Bye.